With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to this week's La Liga Lowdown Recap episode, also broadcast on Sirius XMFC 157. I'm your host Drew McTeer, and we look back at match day 9 and all the drama it involved. It was a bumper Saturday of fixtures, and Real Madrid were bumped off the top of the table. Barcelona now lead the way, and we'll get to them and their 3-0 win over Eibar shortly, but we have to start at Son Moix, where newly promoted Real Mallorca hosted Real Madrid for the first time since 2012, and they defeated Zinedine Zidane's men 1-0, thanks to a Lago Jr. goal. La Liga Lowdown's Alex Fitzpatrick was the sideline reporter on La Liga TV for this match, and this is what he thought about the Lago Jr. goal in the moment.
Wow, what a night we have set up now. We have a pitch side for us tonight, Alex Fitzpatrick. And Alex, if you can hear us above the din, tell us, how did the Son Moix fans react to that goal?
The atmosphere has just lifted another notch, if it was even possible for that to happen. Lago Jr. cutting in, scoring a trademark Lago Jr. goal, really. That's what he does. He cuts in off that side and tries to bend it in the far corner. As you said, he's not had the greatest of seasons so far, but the manager stuck with him. And you saw his celebration. He's headed straight for the bench, straight for Vicente Moreno.
After he had a chance to catch his breath and savour this special Real Mallorca victory, we caught up with Alex again for a more thorough chat about this win. Alex, we just heard your live take on Lago Jr.'s goal for La Liga TV. What do you think of it now that you've had the chance to see a replay, or two, or 40?
I think I said it in the commentary, and it rings true the day after the event. It was a trademark Lago Jr. goal, really. His thing is to go down the wing, and he'll cut inside. He'll look to get a shot away. Normally in those situations, though, obviously defenders would defend that by doubling up or by the centre-half coming across, and if when he does cut inside, stopping his avenue towards goal. And he managed to isolate the Real Madrid defence, get in a good position and bend it into that back corner. So, yeah, a really good goal, a trademark goal for Lago Jr., exactly what I would have expected from him.
And what about the atmosphere, Alex? Surely this was one of the most special games you've been at.
The atmosphere in the ground was fantastic, as you'd expect. It was a full house. It was a sellout. You'd expect that against the big boys. But it was at times a little bit of a strange atmosphere. Three sides of the ground have season tickets sold in them with socios. And they were full and packed with people with red Real Mallorca shirts on, and the Luisitar stand behind the goal in the north end of the ground was singing to those two stands and getting them to return chants, and you know, really, really creating a fantastic atmosphere, and the team were absolutely buzzing from that, and the ground was bouncing. But then down in the south end of the ground is the entire stand has been left with no season tickets in there, only for match-to-match ticket sales. So those tickets were on sale to, well, anybody that could get their hands on them. And of course, there were a number of Real Mallorca fans in there, but the vast majority of supporters in that stand were actually wearing the white shirts of Real Madrid. So it was, in that sense, a very strange atmosphere, because you had three sides of the ground singing, three sides of the ground celebrating, and kind of an unofficial away end, really, in that south side of the stadium.
Real Mallorca only had one shot on target in this game, but they defended quite well throughout. Was this a deserved win?
Was it a deserved win? Well, I think if you look at the statistics and if you look at shots on target and things like that, it might lead you to question whether it was a deserved win or not. But I think in the key moments, Mallorca got it right and Real Madrid didn't really. One shot on target is all you need if it goes in the back of the net and you keep a clean sheet. And the key moments, Mallorca did well. They managed to defend when they had to. But also, I think Real Madrid were misfiring.
And what did you make of Real Madrid? They came into this match with 8 absences and also had Varane on the bench. They seemed like a team with a clear structure or idea.
Well, Real Madrid looked every bit a side who really hadn't played together. And the lineup, not through any fault of Zidane, he had the players that he had available. He had injuries to a series of key players, Gareth Bale, Luka Modric, Toni Kroos. And of course, Eden Hazard missing because of the birth of his child. It was a little bit of a strange lineup, and it meant that they were playing in a different way from how they'd normally play. So they'd normally play the 4-3-3, and obviously they had Luka Jovic up top, which then meant that the focal point wasn't Benzema. I thought Benzema had quite a good game, drifting around, picking up the ball, always involved, laying it off well. But they looked very disjointed. As you said, they had no clear structure, no idea really of where they should be, what they should be doing. And they very much looked like a team of 11 individuals rather than a collective. And I think that's where Mallorca were able to exploit that. Mallorca were very much a collective. They were all on the same page in terms of tactics and hard work. And it was not a good one for Real Madrid. And it just goes to show that it's not just about putting 11 players onto the pitch and those players being better. At the top level, you just can't do that. You're going to have oppositions who are more competitive than that, and you just can't rely on having the better 11 players.
How did Zidane seem after the game? The pressure must now be on him, right?
After the game, he was clearly unhappy. He didn't really want to answer the questions during the TV interviews. He was stood with the media person from Real Madrid very close by, who had their eye on the watch and making sure that once he'd done his minimum commitments, he was off and away. And he almost was taking half a step forward towards the Spanish television interviewer that was speaking to him. Every time there was a question, and they were difficult questions. He was asking the difficult questions that you would expect to be asked after that sort of performance, that sort of result, and where it leaves them, really. The pressure was on him, and he did look tense after the game, and he must be starting to worry that if there's not a positive result on Tuesday, that really, against Galatasaray, that is, in the Champions League, that really they might be starting to consider whether or not this time round for Zidane, this project's coming towards its end.
Talked about the forgotten man. Rakitic. For the man who's taken his place, at least in the lineup, if not Barcelona hearts, Frankie de Jong.
That there was the sound of Eibar fans applauding, but they weren't applauding one of their own players. They were giving an ovation to Barcelona's Frankie de Jong as he was substituted off towards the end of Barcelona's 3-0 win at Eibar. That's how good of a performance De Jong had. He was everywhere in midfield and played some stunning football, which is particularly impressive given how hard Eibar pressed their opponents, giving them no time on the ball. But De Jong only needs a millisecond to do something magical. He didn't score any of the goals or assist any. That was left to Barcelona's MSG front three of Messi, Suarez and Griezmann. Each one of them got in the score sheet, and for the latter two goals in this 3-0 win, all three of these attacking talents were involved. They're starting to click, it seems. And that's 5 wins in a row now for Barcelona, who have returned to the top of the table with 19 points. That's ahead of Real Madrid on 18. Let's also talk about the other De Jong of La Liga, Luke De Jong. He finally scored his first Sevilla goal, and it came just in time for the Andalusian club on Sunday night. They were being held to a goalless draw at home to Levante, but De Jong popped up with a header to make it a 1-0 victory. It took him 21 shots for his first La Liga goal, but he finally has it. Let's speak now to Dan Parry in Bilbao. Dan was along at Athletic Club's 1-1 draw with Real Valladolid lead a match, where Iñaki Williams gave the Basque side a lead just after the half-hour mark before goalkeeper Unai Simón made a huge mistake in the second half, pushing the ball onto Iñigo Martínez and scrambling to try to keep it out of his own net, but he couldn't. So Dan, first let's talk about the media coverage and the build-up to this game. What was the pressure like on Athletic to get back to winning ways?
Yeah, I guess there was an increased level of expectancy from the media, as most people in the city thought that this should have been a very winnable game for Athletic Club. But however, I wouldn't say that it was any more intense than normal. After all, Athletic Club is the only club in the city of Bilbao. That means that they're under pretty much constant scrutiny from the local media, and there's always a lot of pressure. However, I do think that maybe there might be even more pressure going into the next game, as now we've gone another week without winning.
It's now four games without a win. Was this at least an impressive draw?
The draw wasn't particularly impressive, to be honest. Athletic seemed to be missing quite a lot in the final third. We are let down by what seems to be a lack of a final touch of that final killer pass and or that killer strike. Perhaps also we're missing a bit of a creative spark in the middle of the pitch, because we didn't really get going at all. I think we only really started to look dangerous towards the end of the game, for example, when Muniain had his chance that was saved by the Leeds goalkeeper.
Iñaki Williams scored, and a really good goal, by the way, but it's still just two goals from him this season. Is that a concern?
In general, lack of goals are a concern in general. I don't think we've scored more than three goals in a game for quite a while now. I can maybe think of maybe once it's happened under Garitano, but that's definitely something that Athletic have to look at, and I think maybe they have to adapt the way they play to suit Williams' strengths better. Because when we put balls over the top, he's very, very good at running past the defender. He's good in those sort of situations, but he seems to struggle with those typical in-the-box type striker goals. So yeah, it's an issue across the team, and it's an issue for him as well.
Thanks to Dan for that analysis. Now, on to the big derby match of the weekend. It was the Southern Madrid derby between Getafe and Leganés on Saturday evening. With riot police brought in and a smashed window on the Leganés bus, it's clear this one was tense. But in the end, it was Getafe who got the win. You could hear the Getafe fans in full voice there, singing Getafe is better than Leganés. And going by the table, that's 100% true. Two goals from substitute Angel Rodriguez earned Getafe a 2-0 win to put them on to 13 points and in 9th place. Leganés, meanwhile, still winless and stuck on 2 points at the very bottom of the table. With plenty more to get through as we recap the rest of the La Liga weekend, we'll be getting back to you to talk about the other games from round 9 after this short break.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome back to this La Liga Lowdown recap of Match Day 9, a match day that started on Friday night with a battle between two of the newly promoted sides, Granada and Osasuna. Both of these teams have been impressive since their promotions, but Granada especially so, and they got the 1-0 victory to move into third in the table. That's quite amazing. Domingos Duarte was their hero as he made one goal-saving tackle in defence and headed in the winner in attack. Peña, ingresa María Peña, la pone primer palo, gol del Villarreal. ¿Cómo? ¡Gol! Let's talk now about Espanyol. They've replaced David Gallego as coach during the international break, sacking him and then announcing the hire of Pablo Machin just 17 minutes later. But Machin got off to a bad start for a 1-0 defeat against Villarreal. So here's Roman de Arquer to discuss this situation. So Roman, how did you rate the Espanyol performance?
Well, Machin didn't have a very easy debut against a Villarreal who we know is in good form, who's playing really well lately and is having a very good start to this season. But it has to be said, Espanyol were the better team in this game, even though they lost. I mean, they had more ball possession, so which is something quite unusual from Espanyol. So there we can start seeing what Machin is looking for. And then also they had more chances, more opportunities. 18 shots from Espanyol, 4-11 from Villarreal. So, I mean, Espanyol deserved at least a draw. They were the better team overall, and in one game, Machin has already proved that this team can do much better.
What did Pablo Machin do differently?
Well, there are three things I would point out Machin did quite differently in this game. First of all, of course, the formation, which was a 3-5-2, he's used very often with his other teams in La Liga, whereas Gallego, of course, was using a 4-4-2, so it's a very different formation. Then also, he introduced a few new players. Víctor Gómez as a deep fullback going up and down the right wing. He was really good, a really talented young kid who got the chance with Machin. And he also introduced Bernardo, somebody he knew really well from Girona, who was a definite starter for Machin and who's going to get another opportunity because with Gallego he wasn't getting many minutes. And finally, one of those things which interested me was that the team was crossing the ball a lot into the box. Lots of crosses from both sides, looking for their tall strikers such as Caleri and then Facundo Ferreira when they came in. So it seems like it's going to be one of Machin's tactics in looking for more goals during this season.
Which Espanyol players do you think will thrive the most under Machin?
Of course, the fullbacks are going to have a lot of protagonism in this kind of system because they have a lot of presence in attack, but also a lot of presence in defense. So keep an eye out for Víctor Gómez. I think he's going to be really important. In his debut, he was just fantastic. It was his first time in front of the fans at the RCD Stadium. Let's keep that in mind. So credit to this kid. And also on the other wing, I think Adrià Pedrosa will be very good. Then I'd mention maybe Marc Roca. I think he's going to also have more protagonism because Espanyol are trying to have the ball more often. So he's going to be a good connection point between the defense and the attacking players. And finally, I'd say El Mono Vargas because he was really good. He was also a good link with Caleri. And he was really looking for the ball during the whole game. He wanted to take the ball forward. He wanted to be the important man. So I think he's going to be one of those key players this season for Machin.
This game was played in Catalonia, even though there's political protests going on at the moment, protests which forced next weekend's Clásico to be moved. But why was this match able to take place as scheduled in Barcelona?
If only I had the answer to this question. I mean, if I think about it logically, I imagine they interpret that the stadium is further away from the city centre where all the riots and demonstrations are happening, because the RCD Stadium is in Cornella, which is in the outskirts of Barcelona for those who don't know. And I'm also guessing that maybe Espanyol isn't a politically biased team, or at least they try and show themselves that way. And it's not as common to see their fans protesting against political stuff or motives. So maybe those are the two reasons which made it go ahead.
And what do you think about the postponement of El Clásico? The right decision?
Well, if you ask me, it's a stupid decision, to be honest. I mean, it's unnecessary to move the game to another month. It's unnecessary to revert the fixtures and play first at the Bernabeu and then at the Camp Nou, such as Javier Tebas was suggesting. I mean, I'm doing my day-to-day life here in Barcelona normally. I can walk in the streets, I can move around, there's no hassle. There's true, there have been some riots in certain points of the city, mainly at night. It's a bit of vandalism, it's people getting out of control. That is happening, I can't lie to you about that. But it's really very specific and easy to avoid. Mostly it's just peaceful protests, people fed up with the political situation here in Barcelona, and I don't think it would really affect the game at all. The only bad thing maybe for Real Madrid due to this would be the extra pressure they'd have at the Camp Nou, more protests, more people complaining, more people showing their political interest and chanting and protesting against maybe Los Blancos and Spain in general. But apart from that, I don't think there'd be any real problem, any inconvenience. Security-wise, I think it would be okay. I mean, we saw the Espanyol game go on without any problem. The Camp Nou isn't the city center either. It's further away also from where all the things, all the bad things at least, are happening. So, I mean, this game should be played on the 26th of October, such as it was scheduled.
Perdiendo 1-0 en el Metropolitano, pero con una falta peligrosa y con un hombre más sobre el campo. Ya hasta el final, parejo al golpeo, 6 en la barrera. ¡Pame los cuchillos, González! ¡Parejo, chuta! ¡Qué golazo! ¡Gol, gol, 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 gol,
gol! There was a clash of titans on Saturday afternoon as Atletico Madrid hosted Valencia. It finished 1-1 as Dani Parejo hit a beautiful free kick to cancel out Diego Costa's first half penalty given for Denis Cheryshev handball on the very edge of the penalty area. It means Valencia have now gone 10 matches without beating Atletico, which is a record, but they'll surely be happy with the point as it was another positive away result for Albert Celades and his Valencia side after the wins, of course, at Chelsea and at Athletic Club. Let's bring in Paco Pollock now. And Paco, how impressed are you with the way Valencia compete away from home?
Well, I'm happily surprised if we consider how crazy and hectic the summer has been for these players, but not really impressed, as Valencia's DNA in the last two seasons was exactly the one we've been seeing to date. Very solid, very tough to beat both home and away, with also severe problems to score regularly, but with a defending proficiency that allowed them to stay in the game almost till the last minute. Against Atletico, we saw exactly that, powered by a tactic switch in the second half when Condogbia was subbed and Gameiro came in. With that 4-4-2 final in place and Parejo bossing the game, Valencia didn't only level, but they could also have won the 3 points.
It's another away game next as they go away to Lille. What are your expectations for this Champions League match?
Valencia definitely have to win this if they expect to be contenders for the first two spots in their group. Winning in London was a big coup back in the day, but the defeat later at Mestalla against Ajax was both very tough on the team and also left no margin for further mistakes. The players and the staff know that picking up the 6 points against Lille can be the key to qualifying on the last 16 round, so I expect a huge game in France, absolutely.
Dani Parejo was the man scoring the equaliser, a brilliant free kick. It was only the 6th direct free kick scored past Oblak in La Liga. How would you describe Parejo's last 12 months, Paco?
In the same way I could describe his past 3 or 4 seasons in the team. He's the captain and absolute leader of the gang. He still has to endure critical fans and haters who are unable to appreciate his brilliance. But the fact that he has managed to turn around the opinion of 90% of Valencia's fan base with leadership, quality, consistency and pure skill is something that, I have to be honest, I haven't seen in 15 years working as a journalist here. He is hands down one of the best players in the league, and the brilliant free kick goal against Atleti should stand right up there with the best goals we've seen to date this season.
Gangan Lee was sent off late on for a really bad tackle on Santiago Arias, very worthy of a red card. He also had a bad tackle on Carlos Perez in the defeat at the Camp Nou that could have been a red. Paco, does he have a disciplinary problem? Does he need to control his frustration and energy a bit more?
See, Kangin Lee's problem is his eagerness to play and show everybody he's worthy of all of the praise he's gotten in the last couple of years. Remember, he's only 18 and one of the biggest prospects not only in Spain but in the whole continent. That fiery attitude and drive to run and chase and recover the ball is something he must tame down, because as we usually say, attackers are really very clumsy when making challenges and tackles and are easily booked for that. The red card was totally deserved. The player was devastated and crying inside the locker room, as some of his teammates said later. But I'm sure he will learn from the experience and become a huge player in the next few years.
How would you describe Denis Cheryshev in his afternoon? He was a very frustrated guy, I thought. Nothing went right for him.
Yeah, well, unlucky. Just unlucky, period. He had an awful evening and he was kicked out of the game by Jimenez early in the first half in one run in the wing where he got fouled, clearly fouled, and the referee didn't make the call. From that point onwards, everything Cheryshev did, every effort he made to help the team, had a negative outcome. You know, a stupid handball in the limits of the box, which eventually became a penalty against Valencia, and especially a clear chance he had, which was slightly touched by Oblak and sent straight into the bar. Definitely a Russian winger won't have a good memory of what happened last weekend.
Thanks for that, Paco, and thanks to all the other contributors this week, to Alex Fitzpatrick, Dan Parry, and Roman de Arquer. I'm Hugh McTeer, and I've been your host for this Match Day 9 recap. We'll have our Week 10 recap coming to you at the same time next week, so look out for that, and thanks for listening.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.